When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
All right, welcome into another episode of Hockey Royalty Live, official podcast of HockeyRoyalty.com. Today, we'll be talking about the trade deadline aftermath, how your Kings look withstanding Pat, the big trades in the Western Conference, getting healthy. Kempe, with some nasty goals going here, we're talking about that, and playoffs moving forward. So get in the chat, like and subscribe. You know what to do. Let's go. Welcome in, everybody. Thank you guys for coming in the chat. Don't forget to hit that like button because we have a great show for you guys today. Already starting it off with a bang with Topanga with the $7 super chat. You guys are the best. Go Kings, go. No, you are the best. Thank you so much in here and donating to this glorious podcast. Boys, how are you guys doing?
Doing pretty good. Doing good. I'm a big fan of daylight savings, so now we got the extra hour. It seems I can go outside and it's still bright outside, so I still get to see the sun. How you doing, Joe?
All right. It's daylight savings with the little ones. A little bit of an adjustment.
I'm sure it's probably a big adjustment, huh?
It for the 5-year-old, dude was still up at like 5:30, so it doesn't matter for him. But for the 3-year-old, he was all out of whack the first like day or two. But he's settled back in now, so. But no, other than that, things are going all right. Things are buzzing. It's nice to like sit down and watch a hockey game on a night when the Kings aren't playing and just like no stress, no frustration, no wanting to like throw the remote, I was watching Buffalo just utterly dismantle the Islanders in what's becoming a really fun Eastern Conference playoff race. As a matter of fact, as the fraudulent Detroit Red Wings keep losing, which is, I get a kick out of that. So, anyways, Brandon, how you doing?
Doing pretty good. Just been packing today, so I move in a week. So just getting all that stuff buttoned up, putting away clothes I don't wear and throwing stuff away like that. And so just trying to get as much as I can do before the day of. You can't really like tear down your TV because I need that for the next week. I can't really, get my couch moved because I need to lay on it and all that kind of stuff like that. But all the knickknacks that you don't feel like putting away and. So I did the kitchen pretty much today, and that was a big chore. But, not too bad. Doing pretty good. Just on the final countdown, and then I'll be glad to get in the new spot. So
there we go.
Nice.
Here we go.
Speaking of new spots, plenty of new spots in the Western Conference after the trade deadline, after the aftermath, but none for the LA Kings. So the LA Kings stay pat. We get a couple people back from LTIR, but we'll get back to that in a little bit. But as far as any new acquisitions, the Kings do nothing. And we talked about that in the trade deadline preview. I'm not a fan of that. You guys figured they probably wouldn't do anything. They were linked to one big trade. A couple of people said it was linked. Some people said they weren't linked. Who knows at this point? But when the dust settled, Kings, no new acquisitions at the deadline. Joe, you guys were on the live show. Did it kind of have that feeling as the day moved along, the Kings weren't going to really do anything, or were you expecting that when you woke up and had your coffee?
I had said, I think that I wouldn't be surprised to maybe see them add like depth somewhere. Like I wasn't expecting any sort of impact, but I to say I wouldn't have been surprised, certainly wasn't expecting it. So, and then to your point, as the day went along, it's like, okay, there's nothing cooking here. And I know that Ullmark rumor kind of floated about. I never for one second bought the PLD thing. I don't think he was the one that was in that deal. If there was a deal for Ullmark anyways, I don't think it was PLD. So you knew that if the Kings were going to make a move, it required money going out. As much as we all kind of came up with potential scenarios for Matt Roy, I totally understand them not wanting to trade Matt Roy, because if they want to win a playoff series this year, Matt Roy makes it more likely than not having Matt Roy, because he's a very good defenseman. So, I think there was other ways to get creative that they could have done, but we'll see in the off season, but not surprised. I totally understand the frustration. I totally understand people wanting them to do more, but when you look at the money and lack thereof, there's no cap space. The guys weren't going to be on LTIR through the end of the season. If they're not willing to move money out, which they weren't willing to do to remove from the roster, nothing you can do.
Russ, how did it feel in the building? And then looking at, kind of in envy of the other teams making all these big moves, what was it like in your feeling watching it on trade deadline day?
Yeah, man. I mean, you kind of watch all these Western Conference teams load up and you just kind of sit back and you're like the kid watching all these kids play with their new toys, and you're just sitting there with nothing. I mean, as a Kings fan, it's a little disappointing, right? I mean, it's almost like making you come to the realization that this team isn't as good as what you thought it would be, and maybe what even management thought it would be. Because, I mean, if you're Rob Blake and assuming he's probably hoping this team fights for his job at this point, I mean, if they aren't successful in the playoffs, then a lot of people are going to have the pitchforks out. So, I mean, you're kind of, if you're Rob Blake, you're hoping that this team is successful, and for him to really do nothing, it's almost kind of strange, because I would have thought, like, if that's really the case, then maybe he tries to add something, get creative. Like, I agree with Joe, like Matt Roy, the whole Matt Roy thing, I never saw that happening in terms of him trading him. The Ullmark thing. I heard a bunch of different things. Like I actually had a guy tell me that it was PLD in the trade, and it was PLD for Grizzlick and Ullmark. But I mean, that seems so far fetched, and I don't know if Rob Blake would be willing to just kind of really throw in the towel on the PLD contracts this quickly. But hey, who knows? Maybe he was trying to look to create some more moment or movement and flexibility in the future with this deal. Who knows? But I mean, it's really just a rumor, and just for the Kings to really trade for a goalie, and as good as Ullmark is and has been, I probably wouldn't have been that excited about it anyway. You seem like you're getting good goaltending from Talbot and Riddick as it was. So, I mean, ride those two. But as far as them standing pat at the deadline, a little disappointed. Wanted to see them maybe get a little creative. I mean, do something, right? Like, get a little bit of excitement for the fan base, for the team, maybe jolt a new personality in the locker room, hopefully a good one. I understand that the salary cap was really to a minimum. So,
yep.
But, I mean, you still saw other teams get creative. I mean, Noah Hanifin's on the Vegas Golden Knights, and his cap hit's only $125,000 more than what Andreas Englund's cap is.
So is Thomas Hertl.
Yeah. So
they got real creative.
Yeah, exactly. So you saw teams get creative. So if Rob Blake really wanted to do something, I felt like he probably could have. But
I buy that.
I mean, he said it himself after the press conference was over that he was never going to take away from this team.
Mm-hmm.
So, which makes a lot of sense. So I get that, but for them to really not make any sort of addition, especially when it seems like there are clear holes in this lineup. I mean, looking at LD3 here, and it just should scare everybody that Andreas Englund's going to be playing big minutes in the playoffs, because it scares the living hell out of me, to be honest with you. And, I mean, you're looking maybe hopefully find some depth adds in the bottom six. I love Alex LaFerriere probably more than any other person. But I mean, even then, you try to find somebody to kind of slot in there. So I don't know. It's still disappointing, but it was overall, it's pretty expected.
What is this not making a move say about Rob Blake or say about his view of this team, Joe?
I think. Yeah, no, it's hard. Obviously, I'm trying to get into the mind of Rob Blake. Clearly, he's comfortable. And to expand on that a little bit further, you know, he's perfectly fine with where the defense is. Russ said, you know, about Andreas Englund, you know, I think it's, there's, it's the left side in general is not good. And I think the Kings have, but the problem is they've kind of, they've boxed themselves into this because of the system and the way that they play. It is, it doesn't, I'll say it doesn't allow for talent on the left side, but it turns these big bodied long defenders into being relevant or being capable. You know, look what it did to Gavrikov. Gavrikov was part of the problem in Columbus and he flourished in Los Angeles. You know, he's come back to earth a little bit, but he's still light years ahead of where he was in Columbus because he fits this system absolutely perfectly. This system has its limitations, and anybody that's listened to this show or follows me or Russ or you on Twitter, I think I'll understand what we think of that system and its limitations. So, but to me, it tells me because you could have, you know, you easily could have found a defenseman that's maybe a little bit more veteran, has a couple playoff games under his belt. Not to say that I would have think it's worth doing it and spending any assets to get, but it could have been done to go do that and upgrade LD3, you know, over Englund and over Moverari. Maybe they don't feel comfortable with Moverari. I get that too, if that's their choice. I don't believe that there couldn't have been an upgrade to the lefty. They've been playing 11 forwards. Clearly they don't like Arthur Kaliev. Let's just call it what it is. They don't trust him. He's not a guy that they see as an everyday player. I believe they probably could have found a, again, really cheap fourth line type of player that's a more quote unquote veteran presence. They didn't do that. So to me, evidently Rob Blake is good with this. And I don't know, you know, obviously I imagine probably Hiller too. I'm sure he's not, it's not as if he's not in those conversations. So it's a little frustrating because almost anything is an upgrade when it comes to the LD3 side of it. And I don't think 11-7 is a long-term a good idea for the Kings. I mean, I can see why it makes sense in certain situations or in short spurts or whatever. I sort of get it, but I don't think it's, this team is built for that. So for them to just ignore, I should say ignore, they're obviously banking on Kempe coming back, Grundstrom coming back, Arvidsson coming back before the season. So they'll likely be 12 forwards, but you're also then banking on health from everybody else the rest of the way. So yeah, I mean, he clearly is comfortable with the roster. And, you know, I don't think the roster is constructed all that great, but it is what it is. So to me, to short answer after the rambling is he's clearly comfortable with the roster.
Russ, is this his version of doubling down in his offseason moves, you think?
You would think so, right? And it kind of seems that way from the outside in. I had someone bring it up to me, like, just ask me the question, is like, do you think ownership is probably limiting a lot of what Rob Blake probably could have done or even wanted to do? And I kind of brushed it off, but then you more really think about it. I mean, if we all kind of expect this to be the end of the rope for him as general manager, if things don't go well in the playoffs, I mean, that could be the case. I could see that definitely being a possibility, but I mean, right now he's the general manager. So if they didn't want him to make those moves or give him the freedom to do so, that I probably would have imagined they'd just want to let him go already. So that's kind of a iffy, it's a lot of speculation, but
yeah,
either way, I mean, yeah, I don't know if this is just what him doubling down is just, yeah, like Joe said, like he built this roster and he thinks this defensive group is good enough to be successful in the playoffs. And I know a lot of people who say like, oh, maybe they didn't have the assets or the cap space. I mean, Colin Miller, who's a right shot defenseman, I'll leave it at that, but he's got like a $1.8 million cap. He was acquired for a fourth round pick in 2026. Like, it's not like rental prices were that expensive. I mean, we saw 2027 draft picks get traded. So, I mean, I know the Kings don't have a couple of assets this year's draft, but they got all their draft picks in the future after that. So,
and for a team, well, and for a team that if you want to win a playoff series and yada yada and all the whole, like, you figure to do that, they're going to have to beat a really good team, probably Edmonton, or if they finish in a wild card, one of the top teams in one of the divisions. And it's like, okay, so you usually, hockey speak, these guys want playoff experience, right? And you're going to trot into the playoffs with what, Laferriere, with Turcotte, with, you know, Andreas Englund has zero playoff games, by the way, in the NHL. So, you know, obviously Spence is young. So that's the kind of the reason why I thought that they may go there, because looking for that kind of a little bit more veteran. Yeah. So again, I'm not saying like that. I don't really care so much about that. Like, I would have definitely went and done the D side of it, because it just is desperate for an upgrade. The forwards, I'm comfortable riding with what they had up front. And I think I was pretty clear about that, but any depth defenseman would have been nice.
I would say that Mervari is that person. I mean, you just want Englund off the team, but they've shown that they're not going to do that. I mean, so it's, I think Mervari showed that he's been more than capable.
Yeah.
Will they ever take Englund out of the lineup? It doesn't think so. Like, he's scheduled to play 82 this year.
Yep.
Yeah. So which is crazy.
He's played, and it's funny. He's played, I think what I looked at it the other day, he's played a total of 80 games in his NHL career, dating back like what, 6 years? Mm-hmm. It's like, did all these teams miss Andreas Englund? No, I don't think so. Okay. Like, it's just,
it's one of the biggest question marks of the season, to be honest with you. And like, I get like, don't, we're not knocking him and saying that he shouldn't be playing at all. Like, I get it. Like, get him plots, spot starts. I mean, against big body teams too, but for him to play the whole entire season, especially when the offense has been as anemic as it's been lately, it's baffling.
And I want to say, I say this all the time, it's not his fault. He's playing a role. He's doing his role. He's doing what he's asked to do. By all accounts, fantastic guy. Like, it's never personal or anything like that. It's just, he's very limited in what he can do with the
podcast. And he's not the reason for it either. When you're searching for offense as much as you are lately, like, give your chance or give yourself any possibility of finding some scoring anywhere else. Like, at this point, like, you can't just keep relying on like Kopitar or like the top guys just carrying you the whole way. Like, if I understand England's not the reason that they're not scoring, but when you aren't scoring, those top guys aren't producing, you have to get creative and try some other ways to find scoring in some other areas. And they're just not doing that. It's just, I don't know. It's not, I don't want to say it's a black hole, but it kind of is what it is at this point. I mean, really, it's just, he goes out there and the puck, like Joe, you've said it, when the puck's on his stick, it's like a tennis ball, right? I mean, he just wants it off as quick as he can. And we've seen icings that have almost led to goals. We've talked about it like the other game the other day. Like, it's
go look at
truly.
There's
I have no idea.
Two things. First of all, on Natural Stat Trick, like, just feel, everybody should feel bad for Jordan Spence, because his numbers with Englund are fine. They're like right around 50% in terms of Corsi and expected goals. Without Englund, away from Englund, he's over 60% in both of those categories. He's a totally different defenseman when he has somebody that's actually capable of doing some other things. It's just
his numbers with Gavrikov are outstanding.
He drags people down because he's just of what his limitations are. I'm sorry. It's just, that is what it is. And it's just unfortunate that, you know, you limit your upside when you do that. When you roster players that have zero upside, you limit the team as a whole's upside.
Well, especially for a young player like Spence, who's been his number one partner the entire year. It's like, what you're trying to develop this young defenseman who wants to have the freedom to do what he does best, which is skate in the offensive zone, skate up the ice, like we've seen, lead up rushes, but you can't do that because he's got to worry about getting the puck just out of his zone. Mm-hmm. Because I don't know, it's just frustrating.
Well, fans are frustrated, and Socket to Me Cake has given us $20 to ask this question. Appreciate it, my man.
Thank you.
In the event of Rob Blake is either fired or not re-signed after the season, who would you like to see take over as GM? Dean Lombardi, Mike Fuda. Is there any other name? I am not in entrenched in the assistant GMs or the names around the league. So this will be a question for you guys.
I don't know. I mean, that's a really good question. I mean, it's you wonder, like, if Rob Blake is gone, is Luke Robitaille still around too? Because he's the president of hockey operations, I believe. So, I mean, you have to wonder, maybe he's looking for another guy he's familiar with, or maybe they just kind of turn everything over and just start anew. But I mean, as far as GM names, I think we're kind of just be guessing. But I guess one name that kind of comes up to me, and I see him a lot around the rink or at the arena, and he's a scout for the San Jose Sharks, is Ned Colletti. He's the former GM for the Dodgers, and he's a scout for San Jose now. Lives in LA, sees a lot of games in LA. So, I mean, I guess that would be an interesting name. He's been a GM for baseball before, so I don't know. Maybe the transition to hockey is just as easier, but I don't know. It's just us guessing at this point.
It would be, I mean, I guess a name, I mean, as Mark Bergevin has been around, obviously has GM experience. I don't know if he's somebody that would be.
You're exciting a lot of people with that one.
I'm not saying I'm interested in it, but he's a name with GM experience that's been in the organization as well. So I wonder, but that could also go part and parcel with a kind of clearing house type of thing. So I don't know. This is a fantastic question because it's a very real possibility that, you know, the Kings could have, you know, Rob Blake's been around for a while now and we've sung his praises, including myself in terms of how he's kind of
deserves a ton of praise for how good this team
for some of the trades. But what we are seeing is a clear miss evaluation or lack of evaluation of talent and how the game is played in 2024, where they've just refused to go out. And we hoped last year that it was going to start to change, where we were going to start to see a little bit more dynamic on the left side of the D, and they've doubled down and then tripled down with these very, very defensive, limited with the puck defensemen. It doesn't work. It just doesn't. It's not going to be a system and a roster build that's going to win you a cup. These guys they don't move well enough. They don't move the puck well enough. They're not good enough with the puck. They're good at what they do, but you can't have this many of them that's taking up your defense core. So my hope is this is where he's failed, is identifying talent at the depths of his roster and in certain parts of the roster, in my opinion anyways. And I think that's going to hurt him. And so my hope is that there's a GM, whoever that might be, that comes in that has a fresher, more, you know, see where hockey and how hockey's played in 2024. You don't see a lot of teams play. Anybody that watched that Kings Islanders game earlier this week deserves like a tip or some sort of bonus because that was terrible hockey. That was awful for 2024 to watch that hockey game. Whoever went to that game should get their money back. It is really, really, really it's disappointing. It's just disheartening. There's no, you know, so you just hope that there's a GM that is a little bit more with it, with how the game is played. And you need to have not one or two, but you need to have like three or four, or maybe even five mobile defensemen. And mobile doesn't mean bad at defense. I want to be very clear. Like, you can be a defensive defenseman that skates well and moves the puck. I've mentioned Marcus Pettersson on this show before. Marcus Pettersson's never put up big point numbers, right? Go look. He's never put up 50 points, 40 points, but he's such a good skater. He's a long stick. He moves the puck in transition. That is what you've got to go for. And right now they're severely limited on that on the left side. They really have one guy that is even capable of it, and it's Mikey Anderson. Then when he's out, they have nobody that is really all that good at it. So you have to find a way to transition this. It's tough with the contracts. That's for a different, you know, pod, I suppose, as we look to the off season. So really interesting question. Big thanks, Socket, to me, Cake, by the way. But yeah, I'm very curious to see if this happens, what direction we go. And it's hard to say names because, as Russ said, we'd be speculating, but that's kind of the, I guess, stylistically, where the direction that I would like to see go.
If they're promoting from within, a dark horse name might be Mark Yanetti. head of scouting for a long period of time with the team. You know, that might be a little bit of a reach with that big of a jump, but he knows the organization inside and out. And
I wonder if he's going to be still around though, if Rob Blake goes,
he's already been through two organizations. Yeah. So
I feel like at this point, if Rob Blake goes, I wonder if it's just, they're just going to completely change everything. Cause Rob Blake is obviously his numbers in the Raptors along with Luke Robitaille, who he's been working closely with. So this is actually what I would want. I would just want a complete just turnover, just change everything. If Rob Blake's gone, like, appreciate everything he's done, and he's made this team be successful and turn this team away from a bottom feeder into a contender, or I guess playoff team. But I would just want complete and new, and somebody that's going to give coaches the ability and the freedom to do what they want to do, because it certainly seems like every coach that's come in has to coach a certain way and coach the team a certain way, because that's what this team has been for like 10 years. I mean, this, we talk about the system and the structure. They've been playing the same system and structure since they won a cup in 2012. And so it's like, you just want them to see something new and just, I don't know.
Well,
so,
and look, go ahead, Randy.
I was thinking of a type of a organization. Would you guys want an organization like Vegas who says no draft picks and just like all in all the time, where you're just constantly moving out the future and they'll make the cap work and they'll figure this out and kind of just scramble year after year? Or is there a team that I kind of like, really like the way the Carolina Hurricanes are managed, right? So the way they draft, you look at it time after time, you know, with Scott Wheeler and everything like that, they draft high end upside and skill almost 100% across the board. So if they hit on a fourth round pick, then they really hit on a fourth round pick. If they hit on a sixth round pick, they really hit on a sixth round pick. And if their first round picks hit, then they're high, high skill players. They bring in pieces in free agency to complement those guys on the team. And, you know, they're not a world beater year after year, but they're always right there. And I think they're a couple pieces away. Now, they haven't really, like, and correct me if I'm wrong, went out and just like made that huge acquisition.
Yeah, you're right.
But
they tried. They tried with Pettersson. They tried to get him.
But they built the team as a whole, you know, very consistent. They still have one of the top prospect pools in the game. I really think the way they view how to build a team is they spend most of their draft picks on high skill players, high upside players, and then they bring in the other pieces that they need in free agency. And I kind of like that kind of aspect of what the Carolina Hurricanes and how they view their organization from the level.
And a big part of that is Rod Brind'Amour too, right? You mentioned the coach letting the coach have the flexibility to do what he wants. You know, they are able to identify players that were going to fit into what they do. I love the Vegas. I love what Vegas does. I don't know. I'd have to think about this. If like a new GM were to come in, I agree that hat is fire. if I don't know if like a new GM were to come into this Kings organization, because like, I don't know. I don't know. I'd have to think about this. In general, though, I love the Vegas and their model, the way they do it. Don't hug your prospects, trade them when they have value, bring in, look what they've done. I mean, they're a contender since day one. And a lot of that's because they said, we're here to win. And now part of that is because they were able to take advantage of getting that roster the way they wanted it from the start. That's really kind of helped them jumpstart things. But, you know, it's been what, 6-7 years now, and here they are still doing it. So, and you know, you mentioned
breaking news, by the way, for LA, the Chargers just traded away Keenan Allen to the Bears for a fourth round pick.
What? Really?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh man.
I don't know. No, if Russ is happy about
Slayer.
That. So, and Russ mentioned, and I actually had somebody on Twitter, we were talking about this, about 2012, 2014, you know, oh, they played the structure back then, blah, blah, blah. It's like, here's the thing, though. A lot of things with that. One, in 2014, fast forward 10 years, the Kings have the same 1C and the same 1D. That's the problem, because they're 10 years, it's 10 years later. Not a lot of teams that have the same 1D and 1C are cup contenders. Age catches up. They've never really found somebody to kind of take that over. Also, it was funny. I saw a tweet today. Did you see how many points Jamie Benn won the Art Ross with in 2014?
Yeah.
87. There's how many? It's not the same game. So you can win a 3-2. It can be a 3-2 hockey. You know, Daryl Sutter had, was a 3-2 game. And you know what? If you looked at, he's right. Because if you looked at the betting markets, every over under was 5.5 to 6. Like that was it. 5 to 6 was the range. Now you're not going to find a game under 6 or under 6.5. The game has changed. You got to be able to score now. Like, yeah, you still have to be able to play sound defense. You got to keep pucks out of your net. Like, obviously you can't win every game 7-6, but if you can't score, you're toast. You know, offense is a way bigger part of the game than it ever has been. And so much of that comes from the back end, and the Kings have totally missed the boat on that. They have totally misread that. They've totally whiffed. And I think that's going to be their undoing. Or hey, who knows? Maybe they'll go win the cup and I look like an idiot. I don't know.
Well, you would probably be okay with that. So Nick Roman coming here with a $4.99. Appreciate you here. Does this team have the DNA to be more offensive? Are they a 2-1 team or a 4-3 team? I'll take this here. I think maybe the DNA is like, do they have the skill set players to be more offensive? And I think they do on the offensive side of the puck. You also got Samuel Fagimo on the wings. You have Martin Kromiak. You have guys down there in the AHL that are goal scorers that can play that type of game. And we'll say it again and again. We just don't think there's enough puck movers from the back end as a whole on the team. You do have one in the AHL. He hasn't really blossomed at all. And Kim Nousiainen, you know, their second round pick last year, Dvorak, isn't really a puck mover. He's more of a defensive defenseman now. Is he going to develop that skill set? I hope so. You know, he's playing in a pro league over there. So that's why I'm so in on this first round pick. I thought was necessary for the Kings, and that they need to replenish the back end with more of an offensive mindset. And I'm not a drafter for need. You know, you guys know me that don't draft for need at the big club, but we've decimated the right side of the defense of the prospect pool, making trades getting relevant. We don't really have anybody in the left side out of Dvorak, and he's not really the offensive juggernaut. So there really isn't nothing there on the major level or the minor level. And we'll get into prospects later. And I tweeted that Cole Hudson, brother of Lane Hudson, is my draft crush already for what the team needs. You know, big puck moving defenseman, very offensive minded, somebody on the left side, plays for Team USA. So I really think that this team does have the DNA from a forward standpoint. I think they're just going to have to make some adjustments on the back end. And I think stylistically, you have to probably make some adjustments. The counter punching type offense that we have, where we have to be good on the rush, we have to play stylistically the 1-3-1, choke a team, and then counter punch. Either we're not choking teams because we're not aggressive in the 1-3-1 and we're sitting back and letting them and drill us, and we're not making adjustments there. And then we're not really trying to make the counter punches anymore. And when we were, people were cheating and we're not playing the defense that they needed to play. So I think it walks a fine line. And this team, I think for me, boils down to, they do have the DNA in their core, and maybe not the outlet, not as a whole roster, but in the core, I think they do have a team to be a 4-3 team. I just think there needs to be some tweaks.
I mean, I love what MG88 said here. He said, for as much as people got frustrated with Durzi and Walker's play, don't those look like bad moves now? And yeah, I mean, people hated Sean Durzi for his defense, but he had points. He produced some offense for the Kings, especially on the power play. And maybe a lot of the reasons that second power play unit isn't producing as much as it probably should is because Sean Durzi's not there. And now you're seeing a lot of people complain about Jordan Spence and his inability to score, which I get it, but even at, I think he's still been one of the better puck movers, if not at times the best puck mover on the Kings.
At times the only.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I think to kind of go back to that super chat about the DNA, I think it's absolutely they do. And it's unfortunate because I feel like the structure that the team plays, I mean, most notably the 1-3-1, it could limit a lot of the skill set that some of these players have. I mean, look what it's done to Pierre Dubois. I mean, as much as people want to talk about maybe his attitude and his antics in the past, it's produce 60 points in the NHL on a consistent basis. That's no nothing to laugh at. I mean, even antics aside, he's still been able to produce points. But for some reason, he comes over to LA, where it's such a structured-based team, and you have to stick to the positions in certain situations. He's not producing. So, I mean, some of that could be on him. I don't want to say it's not all on the Kings structure and what they play, but I mean, how many times have we seen players leave and all of a sudden they start to blossom? It's happened numerous occasions. Look at Michael Amadio. He's been a first line player on the Vegas Golden Knights and won a cup with them last year. Nick Dowd, who's turned into a great fourth line center on a consistent basis with Washington Capitals. I mean, I go on and on. But so, yeah, I think as much as we see the skill set, look at the forwards in the lineup. I mean, Adrian Kempe scored 40 goals, obviously, I mean, in the Kings system, but I think he could be doing a consistent basis. Andre Kopitar could probably be even more of a point producer in his career if he had played in a different system. I mean, who knows? But, I mean, you have Kevin Fiala, too. I mean, I can go on and on. So the players are there. The skill set is there. And you would just hope that they would have given these guys some of the freedom to run as and utilize that skill set. But who knows? I mean, obviously, this structure and system in place has won a cup before. So it's hard to say that it can't work because we've seen it happen. So, I mean, I know, Joe, I know it's a new day and age now.
Yeah.
And, but, I mean, who knows? I mean, I think when you sit back and just kind of wait for teams to just punch you in the face, like Joe said, and you wait to counterpunch, I mean, eventually you're going to get knocked out by these heavyweights like Connor McDavid and Nathan MacKinnon. And that's kind of what we've seen in these last few years, especially in the playoffs the last few years against McDavid and Draisaitl. It's like you want to sit back and wait for them to run rampant in the neutral zone, figure it out. They figured it out. They figured it out last year. They figured out how to get through the 1-3-1, and it killed us. So I don't know. I just hope, like, we'll see how it works this year. Maybe it is successful in terms of the structure they play. But like I said, like if a new regime comes in, I want to see a totally different structure change. I'm just
agreed. And I'll disagree a little bit in that, because I don't know that the team has the DNA for two reasons. One, they just don't on the back end. They don't. It's not there. And if you don't have a back end, you don't have a shot.
Well, then let me ask you, what do you mean by that? Because I know you've talked about the left side, and you talked about Anderson can move the puck when he wants to. Mm-hmm. Dowdy obviously can. Spence can. If Clark was in there, then Clark can. That's 4/6 of the team. Like, what percentage of the team do you need to be?
Well, so I would say this. Like, I think I talked about it on Twitter. I don't know if we talked about it before, Russ, on Friday's show. But, like, you look at what the money they're paying Vladislav Gavrikov. You're not getting a near $6 million from him, in my opinion. I guess I don't know. I'd have to check and see what Dom's market value is. Dom Lashisen at The Athletic does kind of a market value thing. But there's nothing there, really, from offensive or transition. Obviously, he's a good defensive defenseman. I don't know that that's worth $6 million. When you look at other guys that are making significantly less money that are much more capable of playing. Now, the reason you do this with Gavrikov is because he fits your system, which is fine, but Russ, like you said, it was 10 years ago, the game's changed, and they haven't won a playoff series since then. So is it working? I don't know. Like, I know there was a little mini kind of rebuild there and retool, so, like, obviously those were going to be a couple down years, but this team hasn't won a playoff series since they've won the Cup. So I think they're clinging to something that they're fooling themselves in if it works these days. So, and up front, I do like the forwards, and I do think they play with pace. I think there's some talent up there. But the Kings don't have stars. Like, they don't have McDavid, MacKinnon, Kucherov, Pastrnak. They don't have these players. The closest the Kings have is Kevin Fiala. And the second he makes a mistake, oh my God, we got to talk about Kevin Fiala. We can't let Kev be Kev because he's going to make a mistake.
The Sean Durzi thing.
Exactly. Sean Durzi. We're not allowed to make a mistake. We can't make a mistake. Well, so you handcuff your talent. But that's what the Kings have done. Because they won a certain way 10 years ago doesn't mean it's going to happen now. So I would like it, Russ, to see if any of these guys, you know, Byfield is obviously evolving, having a breakout year, Fiala, Kempe has scored 40. Trevor Moore, knock on wood, is hopefully getting 30. You know, like there is, and I want a healthy Alex Turcotte. We'll see. Like, and not to mention the centers, who I'm still a big believer in. So it's like, you think that there could be, but maybe if they were freed up a little bit more. And Randon, like, just having defensemen that can, it's not all about points. And I think that gets misconstrued sometimes when I have these conversations on Twitter. I don't even care if the defenseman scores. If anything, I'd almost prefer my defenseman be playmakers getting assists, because I don't want a lot of point shots. That's not really going to lend to a lot of success, as having shots from the point. You know, I'd almost prefer my defense. I don't care if they have a goal or not, but if they can make the pass, right, to get out of the zone that leads to zone pressure, or if they can skate and disrupt the play to keep a puck in the zone that continues the cycle, even if they're not picking up a point, they're instrumental in what has happened in that offense. Mm-hmm. And that's where the Kings lack, is guys that are it's not in their DNA to play like that, right? Obviously, again, Doughty. And I think you see guys like at times they'll jump into play offensively, which is fine, but it never looks natural. Like Gavrikov, and I know this is very different, but go watch Bo Byram jump up into the play and watch him play in the offensive zone versus like Gavrikov, for example. You know, it's not his fault. It's just what he is. They're just two different players, but that's what I'm talking about stylistically. And I think you need to be able to have more of those guys. So I'm not, you know, maybe you can't have all six guys like that. Fine. But right now, I know you mentioned Clark, Randon, they don't want him here. He's in Ontario right now. So they got Spence and they pair him with Englund. They've got Doughty, who, you know, listen, he makes the play he made the other day, spinning off, goes down, makes the pass, leads to a goal. He's the only one in the defenseman that can do that, him and Spence. And it'd be nice if you had more of those guys capable of doing stuff like that. Look at, you know, just go down the line of some of these top teams in the league, and they've got multiple defensemen playing big minutes that can do that. The Kings have a 35-year-old Drew Doughty, 34-year-old Drew Doughty, whatever old he is, still doing it. And then the next best guy is playing with Andreas Englund on the third pair, getting, you know, 10 minutes a night or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So what are we doing?
Then a counter argument, then why were the teams over a full goal team for almost 2 months?
So I actually, thank you for reminding me. I was going to mention that. So they were, hey, everybody was making fun of Vancouver for their PDO. Kings were right there. Maybe not that high, obviously, but the Kings were shooting almost 11% the first 20 games of the season. That wasn't sustainable. Now, you know, now they're shooting, I think, somewhere in the low to mid sevens. They're now in the bottom five in shooting percentage after being top mm-hmm. five the first 20 games. So call it somewhere in the middle where they're like an 8% shooting percentage team. Over the 2 years prior, this has been a 7% shooting percentage team. Like, they've been a low shooting percentage team. So, like, it was happening early, you know, numbers generally regress. And we talked about, well, everybody's waiting for Vancouver to regress. Vancouver's got stars. It's a lot less likely for it to regress when you've got Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson and JT Miller has his abilities. And Brock Besser is a, you know, he's not a perfect player, but he can shoot it, right? So when you have the players capable of doing that, you can maybe sustain things a little bit higher than the average. So I think that's what the biggest thing, Randon, is they were shooting over 10%, and that was never going to be sustainable for the way they play and the personnel that they have.
Well, hopefully your betting is sustainable here at DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of THPN. We all know hockey games move fast, but DraftKings Sportsbook is the official sports betting partner of the NHL. You can score faster than anything happens on the ice this week. New customers can get $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Do you want to parlay the next couple games for your Los Angeles Kings? You can do so at DraftKings. Download the app now at DraftKings Sportsbook app. Code THPN. New customers can get $5 on the NHL and get $200 or bet $500 on the NHL and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. That's only on DraftKings Sportsbook. On code THPN, the crown is yours. Well, let's get into the best trades in the West, because it was fast and furious. Guns a-blazing, six shooters abound. Obviously, big names in our and our rivals there in Vegas, you know, making some huge moves. What were some of your guys' favorite moves for the obviously for that team? Which team got incrementally better? And we'll start with that.
Yeah, I think I talked about this last week. It was the Noah Hanifin deal when it first dropped. We talked about it. That was one of my favorite deals, and he's looked great so far in the first couple of games with Vegas. No surprise. So for them to get him, honestly, the Hurdle deal, I think it's a little comes across a little shocking at first, but then you kind of step back and you're like, okay. I mean, he's kind of coming off a knee surgery. We'll see how good he is. It's not necessarily going to be something that he's just going to dive right into and be the player he was before, or even. And he's also joining a new team too, so you got to look at that. So I think this move kind of is going to be better in the long run. I don't necessarily see it being such a high impact move right now, but I mean, they're still getting a great player, and it's going to be in the division, the Kings division, for a couple of years. So that's kind of scary. But I mean, Vancouver, it's weird. I know they already made their moves early on. I mean, Lindholm doesn't seem to be working that well there. It's mm-hmm. kind of strange. I'm sure that's probably the reason that the rumors came out that they were looking to shop him again. Even then, like Edmonton's move, as much as Henrique has looked good with the Ducks and it's still kind of fresh, I'm curious to see how that turns out. Paid kind of a high price for him, first round pick. So I know they kind of had to, but not necessarily a move that really screams like excitement coming out of Edmonton. They're not going to win or lose games because of Henrique. It's just going to be because of McDavid and Draisaitl, let's be honest. But, yeah, I think I agree with what Carter says. I mean, Carter Score says, I mean, Colorado, they did everything right, I feel like. I mean, they were looking for a second-line center like Joe had been talking about for a couple weeks now. They went out and got him. I mean, they paid a big price with Bo and Byram, and everybody wanted to talk about how Byram was having some bad year and now isn't the player he was before. I mean, look what he's doing with Buffalo. He's a great player, and man.
Yeah, he's a star.
We were talking before we started here. I mean, it would have been so nice to see him with the LA, but then Joe kindly reminded us all that he probably wouldn't have blossomed in LA, and he would have been kind of limited a little bit.
Shackles on
either way, yeah. I mean, you not even to mention Mittelstadt. I mean, look at the moves they made for Jakob Trenin, and I love Trenin. I mean, he would have been perfect. He's an excellent penalty killer, solid guy. He has dropped the gloves with Chara before in the past, so he's not afraid of going up against big bodies. I mean, and Duhame, the mm-hmm. move from Minnesota. I mean, and also Sean Walker too. So as much as Kings fans, I'm a little skeptical to see how Walker does. I think he'll be sheltered a lot. It's just funny because I was watching the game yesterday and he was on a defensive pair with Jack Johnson. So it's like,
ugh, poor guy.
It's so funny. But yeah, I mean, besides the move with Walker, you got Mittelstadt, Duhame, and Trenin. I mean, the Hurricanes just knocked it out of the park with their trade deadline.
Yeah, the Avs did. They're my pretty clear winner, and it's not only just because of every name you just mentioned, and I think Walker stylistically just fits so well with them, but mm-hmm. anybody paired with Jack Johnson is not going to have the greatest time. So we'll see how that shakes out, but I love the fit stylistically. But they also subtracted guys that allowed them to really, they would have been additions by subtraction anyways. And then they replaced them with all the guys you just mentioned. So Curtis McDermott, they move out, and Ryan Johansson, who didn't fit, who didn't work, he's out the door. That's what kind of helped them get Sean Walker. So really, really love what they did. They had clear needs. The clear need was 2C. They filled it. They could have used, they had so many, like, because Byram was playing third pairing minutes, and it's not because he's not good enough. It's just because you've got, Devon Taves, Sam Girard, Cal Makar. So they had a pretty stacked top four as it was. So he's kind of stuck playing third pair minutes a lot of the time recently with Jack Johnson. So no surprise he's having a really rough start. He's going to Buffalo playing top pair minutes with Rasmus Dahlin and is just blossomed. So it's just, you just give the guy the different opportunity, and it's not surprising to see how well he's doing. So, but they could have used another right shot guy that could skate, and they got that in Walker. I think that was a really good fit. The only knock I'll give Colorado is it's a miss for them to not go get a goalie.
I wonder if Ullmark was the one there.
I can see that. I could also see them just somebody that's a little bit more stable as a backup. Like Gorgiev's been fine this year. Right. You know, he's been fine. But I mean, if he goes down, you got you know, Justus Annanen, who I know he's been a, I remember, you know, he's a capable AHL goalie, but boy, this is a cup contender. And if something were to happen with Georgiev, I really expected them to go get somebody that's again, even if it wasn't to take over for Georgiev, just be a stable backup, almost like, you know, what the Kings are doing, you know, with a Talbot Rittich type. But other than that, I think they're the winners. You know, Dallas didn't have a lot of holes, but they filled it with a pretty legit Chris Tanev. That's a scary team. And Edmonton, listen, I think they did what, you know, they needed depth, right? Edmonton needed the, you know, to fill out the rest of their roster, to fill out their bottom part of their roster. And I think they did those things. None of them are really like sexy, impactful players. I mean, Henrique has possibility to be in a complementary role, but you know, they didn't need any big star. But I think they're a little behind Colorado for me in terms of the deadline. And yeah, I echo your thoughts on Vegas too. I mean, that's just incredible. But that's the four teams I think for me that are somebody's going to have to go through is Edmonton, Vegas, Colorado, Dallas. Those are some, they look real good. They look real good. And yeah, thank you, Nick Roman, mentioning Anthony Mantha too. I don't know if his name, if we mentioned it, that's a really good pickup too. So
I'm going to ask you guys real quick about the Vegas thing. And it's been a topic of conversation, or probably be a topic of conversation for quite some time until the new CBA. But what did you guys think about, what do you guys think about the LTIR and how Vegas is utilizing it? Do you think they're cheating their way? Do you think?
Nope, don't care.
Needs to change.
Don't care.
No, because so it only takes a visionary to utilize something that the rest of the team isn't utilizing. And let's not pretend that Vegas is the first person to do it. Didn't the Lightning win two cups?
Chicago,
same exact thing. Chicago. So it's like you're looking at like they're utilizing something that. They're not afraid to buy LTIR. I mean, they're using it to when they can use it now. It just seems, you know, suspicious because it's like, oh, Stone, every time game one happens of the playoffs, he's all of a sudden healthy. You know, I think people are upset because one, their team's not doing it, and two, it just looks suspicious, and then they end up winning the cup, right? And so I think you're looking at Vegas is you're going to get Stone back some point in the playoffs. You're going to get a hurdle being potentially top hurdle towards maybe the Western Conference Final Stanley Cup after his knee and getting acclimated to a new team and stuff like that. Hanifin's and Mantha are good to go. I mean, so like this Vegas team, as long as they can get past the first round, which will probably be Vegas or
could be Edmonton, Vegas in the first round,
which would be a tough draw for them. But you know, I just think it's something on the rest of the league for not utilizing something that's purely legal. And you look at like the NFL was the same way with void years and restructures. Like nobody was really doing it. And now one team started putting void years to make things work and going for a playoff push. And it's like, okay, then they won now other teams are doing it. And the Rams are like, yeah, we don't care about draft picks. We haven't made one since Jared Goff. We're just going for it every single time. And then that's like what Vegas is doing. So it's like, there's teams that out there that are pushing the envelope in a completely different manner than what people are used to or how they play on Chell or what their grandpa told them how to build a team or whatever. And if it works, it works. I mean, me personally, if my team hoists the cup, I really don't give an F on how they got there. Nope. And so Vegas got close and got close and got close. They were aggressive right out of the gate and they just continue to be aggressive and they're going to continue to be aggressive until the wheels fall off and they're so deep in cap that they can't make any moves and they have to sell the farm and start over. They're going to continue to be aggressive. And that's just who they are.
Well, and everybody gets bent out of shape because it's Mark Stone. Mark Stone's body is like pieced together at this point. So like,
lacerated spleen. That's nothing.
Right. Like he's the type of guy where if somebody were to like acquire him, it's like, oh, he's an injury prone guy. And then when he goes and gets injured, everybody's like, oh, this is – we're cheated. Here we go again. Like, no, he is a very injury-prone guy. The guy spends a lot of – he's got back problems. He's got all sorts of freaking problems. So I echo everything Randy said. Couldn't care less. Don't get mad at Vegas. Get mad at the league. But Mark Stone is he's a very injured guy a lot. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, it sucks. He's a great player, but, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I totally agree with both of you guys. Would want to see my general manager doing what their general manager is doing.
And McCrimmon, but what can he do? What can he, like, if
oh, that, and that's what back. I was going to talk about. And that's what I was going to say. So, yeah. I mean, if I totally understand, like, the Vegas is not cheating. That's just, you're just kind of jealous at that point if you're saying it. But I'll say this, and I think it's something that they probably should look at in the next CBA, because if you think about it, like, if Mark Stone hadn't gotten injured, they wouldn't have been able to add all these names. Mm-hmm. And so just because he gets injured, they're able to add these names and then have Mark Stone back for game one of the playoffs. Like, I understand, like, they're able to do that, totally. But it just seems like, I don't know, it just seems like there's something wrong there, that they have that capability only because a guy's injured, when other teams are playing healthy rosters and have to play healthy rosters or have to utilize the salary cap with the healthy roster that they have, so they can't go out and make moves. So I think it's something like, I mean, I've seen other people talk about it, but I would like to see it be like, if a player can't play in the last like 10, 15 games, then he shouldn't be allowed to play in the first round. Like, that should be the case. Like, if you can't be able to manipulate the cap that much where you're able to add $9 million in salary in players just because of a player's injured and then have that player come back in game one. Yeah. That just seems like an unfair advantage for other teams. It sounds like I'm picking on Vegas, because it's only because they're the only team that's doing it.
Yeah, they're the example. Really. That's just the
example that we're using. So, but I would just like to see them take a look at that.
Salary cap in the playoffs?
No. Yeah, I mean, even then, like, that's what's another
thing. But an extended salary cap? Like,
yeah, and that's another thing.
An extra $3 million or something?
Like, you have to have a salary cap in the regular season, but the salary cap doesn't apply in the playoffs? Like, how does that kind of make sense there? What are we missing here?
I'm stealing a little bit from, I think this is a, I don't remember if it was Jeff Merrick or if it was Elliot Friedman said it on 32 Thoughts about I think that right there, the salary cap. And I don't know if there's a situation that happened years ago where, like, Toronto had a bunch of guys that were, like, hurt, legit hurt, and they couldn't, like, they were hurt, but they're not, like, they couldn't, like, get rid of their cap.
It was playoffs,
but they couldn't play. So it's like the GMs are like, okay, well, if this situation happens, then that's not going to be a good look. The other part, I disagree with the whole, like, you know, if he, I understand where you're, because you're right, it does feel a little dirty. I get that sentiment, and I'd be curious to see what they end up deciding to do, because I can't imagine this does. There's got to be some sort of tweak to it. But my concern about if you don't play the final week or the final game and you can't play in the first round is, I mean, inevitably you're going to have guys coming back early, I think, to just make sure they play. And so they're ready to go. And then also, how many times have we heard guys that are, like, hurt, and if this was a playoffs, he'd play, right? So that just happens sometimes, where a guy's not going to play. He's not healthy enough for the regular season because it doesn't matter as much, but he's capable of playing in the playoffs. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. We hear that type of stuff all the time, because these guys go through, they put their bodies through hell, particularly in the playoffs. So I agree that I'm very open, as much as I don't care about what Vegas is doing right now, I'm very open to having like the GMs, you know, have this brought up into meetings and in the CBA, because this is collectively bargained. So the players would have to agree with it. And, you know, obviously they're going to have a big say in this too. So I would like some sort of middle ground to be found, but it's very difficult, because there's always going to be a scenario or a loophole that somebody doesn't think of until somebody thinks of it, and then nobody's going to want that change. So
draft pick penalization.
They're not doing anything wrong right now.
I'm saying though, like, in the future, would it be draft pick penalization? So if you're over by, almost like how baseball gets taxed for every million they're over the the lottery, you know, whatever
the threshold,
if they're over a million or
maybe
two,
maybe they add a luxury tax threshold. I think the NBA is doing something like that soon here, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think Joe said it best. It just feels dirty, and I can't imagine other GMs are probably happy with what's going on.
But I think these other GMs would know if they're in that spot, they would love to have that flexibility. Like if Mark Stone's hurt and you didn't have the ability to do this, that sucks.
Yeah.
You lose a player and you can't replace him because that also sucks. That's also a little unfair. So I agree. I get why people are angry. I don't think they should be angry at Vegas. I think it's just the situation in general. And, you know, we'll see if something comes of it in the future. I just don't know that there's any easy solution to this.
Yeah. Well, we're getting healthier. The Kings are. Kempe and Anderson are coming back or have come back in the last few games. What are you guys' opinion of you on how the Kings have played as of late? And have they do they look like the same players? They look rejuvenized? Like, what is your opinion on our healthy compadres?
Adrian Kempe came back. First game he had kind of looked like he was fighting it a bit. Maybe gripping his stick a little too hard. It was the Dallas game, right? That he just first came back? Yeah.
I think it was the Dallas game.
I believe it was Dallas. Could be wrong. But yeah, he had that breakaway, I believe. Oh, a shorthanded break and just missed it. But you could see we talked to him after the game and his hand was iced a little bit, had a big wrap around it. So I'm sure it's definitely still hurting him. But I mean, he came back and the game against the Islanders and had that typical Adrian Kempe snipe that we're so familiar with. So that's good to see, right? I mean, you're kind of hoping that he would come back 100% or at least be healthy enough to be the Adrian Kempe that we've seen. To see a shot like that go in, that kind of gives a lot of people confidence that we could see that player again. So that was good. He scored again in St. Louis, even though it was that game annoyed the hell out of me, to be honest with you. It was like such a typical Kings game. And it's like you can almost like you knew what was happening from like the first 10 minutes in the game. You already knew that it was going to be a loss because they were coming up flying out of the gates. They look great. They can't score. Binnington looks good. First goal is a softie that Talbot lets in. It's over. The game was already over as soon as that first goal went in. So that game just annoyed the hell out of me. But I mean, like this, like I said, Kempe looks good. Mikey Anderson, he's looked pretty good, I think. Same old Mikey Anderson, so actually no surprise there. I think the two players that are coming back have looked great, and I think we're kind of just waiting to see where Victor Arvidsson's at. Sounds like he's still skating on his own. He's not traveling, obviously, with the team on this trip, but hopefully we see him back when the team comes back next week.
Yeah. I mean, it's good to have them back. Mikey has not had the best season by his standards. So we'll see if he's looked fine since he's come back. So we'll hope if this looks a little reset for him. I'm not worried about Kempe. I mean, you know, I feel like if he needed to miss more time, I'm guessing it's something that can't get worse. I obviously have no idea exactly what the injury even is, but if it was something that he could make worse, then, you know, I would like to see him sit out a little bit more just so he's healthy come, you know, in a couple of weeks come playoffs. But yeah, I think that's good. I was really more for me, like when Mikey Anderson came back and when these guys come back, I'm like, okay, well maybe they shift away from the 11 and 7 and they start to go back to the 12 and 6 because Anderson's back. They haven't done that now. And so they did the first game. I'm like, okay, well maybe they want to ease Anderson back in. And they did it again last game. It's like, okay, maybe the 11 and 7 is what they're going to do. I don't really agree with it, but that was what I was looking for, is to see if when these guys get back and healthy, is there some sort of change to the lineup that corresponds with that? And so far, no.
There was a guy earlier in the chat that wanted to ask you something about the 11 and 7, and I unstarted by accident because I knew we were going to get to it. Why isn't the 11 and 7 sustainable for you in the playoffs?
I don't think the Kings have the players to do it. I don't think they have the horses to do it. Like, you see it works for Edmonton when you have McDavid and when you have Draisaitl. That's easy. You know, that 11 and 7 works really well for them. We've been talking all season about scaling back some guys' minutes, scaling back Kopitar's minutes a little bit. Mm-hmm. And not to say that you can't do that with 11 forwards, you could, but like, I think it almost inherently starts to increase certain guys' minutes. And obviously Byfield's one of them, which is good. You know, Trevor Lewis is going to get more minutes that he just shouldn't. Less impactful players are going to play more. I thought Turcotte the other day, two games ago, I think, played like 3 minutes at 5-on-5, which was really strange to me. So it's like, it's really unbalanced. And they also don't really have the defensive group to do it. You're just kind of rotating through, like, just pick Englund and Moverari, for God's sake. Just for what are we doing? You don't need to rotate the two or whatever they're doing. Like, I think Moverari is clearly better than Englund. That's not to say Moverari is like a top four defenseman. I'm not saying that. It's just he's an obvious upgrade to Englund. But if they don't see that, then just freaking play Englund. I don't know that the seven makes a lot of sense there. I mean, especially Carter scores. So there's Englund and Moverari out there together. Like, what are we? It's just you get yourselves into situations like that where it just doesn't make any sense. So I don't, in my opinion, the Kings don't have the personnel to play 11 and 7 for it to be effective long term.
Yeah, I think when also with the 11, I mean, it's just they lose Jared Anderson Tolan obviously to waivers.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. I'm sure if he was still around, they'd probably go to 12-6 just because they, for some reason, don't want to play Arthur Kaliev.
Weren't they going 11 though with him still? I think he was in the lineup when they were doing 11-7.
Yes, I could be wrong. Kempe was hurt.
Fair enough. Yeah, you're right. Touche. Yeah, so my fault.
I wonder if Jared Anderson Dolan would be back, or the 12-6 would be back if he was around. Yep. It's just, the Arthur Kaliev thing, we're obviously not as probably as high on some Arthur Kaliev as some others. I still think he could be a producer possibly on the fourth line if you give him. We've seen him be successful with Lazat in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So, and with Brendan Lemieux on the other side. So, and I don't want to say Lemieux was the one that was carrying them. Lazat obviously had some chemistry for Kaliev. So I think with the 11 right now, it's looked good in times because I think Killer is such a progressive thinking coach that it works. But I feel like you also lose a lot of continuity with some of these players. And I get the mindset to get Quentin Byfield as more minutes. I'm totally for that.
Yep.
Get him as
yep.
many minutes as he can.
Yep.
But I don't know if he's the guy that you want to be shifting around the entire lineup and putting him with other pieces. I want to see him get more minutes with Anže Kopitar. If you're going to play Anže Kopitar 20 minutes, give him 20 minutes with Quentin Byfield. Now let's see that happen. So it seems like Kopitar's minutes have come down while Byfield's minutes have gone up. So I don't know. Maybe that could be a reason why the offense has been so quiet of late. But I would like to see just like as much as we ask for change because of McClellan, it's like we went from like no change to like this guy who's willing to throw out the blender at 5 minutes into the game every game, which is cool and fun. But at times you're just kind of hoping to see a little bit more continuity and maybe you see some more consistency with some of this production.
Randon, I'm going to be curious to see where you fall on this because I'm actually going to disagree with Russ a little bit here. I kind of like that he's like, you know what? Byfield's my horse. He's going to play, and I'm going to find spots for him. And I actually kind of like that. The thing is Byfield, like we talked, I said earlier with like 11 and 7 works because McDavid and Draisaitl, like Byfield for all that, how excited we are, and he's not a 100-point player, right? He's not a point-a-game player right now. So I'm all for feeding him ice time. It's just, you know, it's less impactful when he's not putting up the numbers as like a McDavid or a freaking Draisaitl or anybody, any star player for that matter, which is why it maybe takes away a little bit from the 11 and 7 as good as it can be. But I'm actually got no problem with him pumping Byfield out as much as he can and kind of just filtering through the lineup. Because if you think about it, if you're going to go 11 and 7, you need somebody to get that extra ice time. He's clearly got the young legs to do it. He's an absolute thoroughbred. So I'm okay with that. I see where you're going with the continuity, especially young players having a breakout season. Maybe you don't want to mess with that. So I see your point. Like, he's having his breakout season. Why throw him all over the place? So I think that's fair, but I'm actually of the side. Let's feed him. Feed him the time. Randon, I don't know what you think.
I think he is one of the people I'd feel comfortable putting on multiple lines on the wing, you know, and letting him play it because – he has a skill set to be on that grinder line with Lewis and everything like that. He's played with PLD. He's played with Kopitar. I don't think he's played much with Deneau this season, but like you really, he's played with a lot of people there to where, I think he's the person that can do it. Feeding him more meats would be good for him there. I think if PLD was playing better, I think he would be one of the players that you would want to do it because he's still young enough and has the legs to absorb 20 minutes a night, but he's not playing well. So you don't want to put him out there more to not do anything. So I think you're right in the fact that the team is just not built for it. But if they are going to continue doing it, he's the player that I would like to see thrown out there more often. It's definitely not Kopitar. It's definitely not.
That's what I'm getting at. So I guess what I'm getting, that makes my point. Maybe you kind of said it a little bit more succinctly. Like if they're going to do it, he's the guy, but he just doesn't produce at the level that you would need. Like the teams that do 11-7, like that Edmonton does, those guys produce at such a higher level. They're going to double his points. So it makes way more sense to like, yeah, obviously get those guys out there. They're going to score 150 points. So I think that he's the guy, but he's not the guy. So
is it just, is he the guy? Because then, you know, a line is not going to like fall off.
Yes.
There's never going to be a lull in like whatever line you trot out there because you have a solid player.
Yes. The reason why I say I'm comfortable with just finding spots because he's the one that from a consistency standpoint just seems to have it. Like he just goes and he's impactful. It seems with every line he plays on. So that's why I'm of the mindset of, yeah, feed him the time.
I mean, more often than not, he's been one of the better players on the ice for the Kings. So
you could say he's the best player on the team. I mean,
at least most reliable in terms of for offensive and defensive.
Driving, yeah.
We could talk about Kevin Fiala and his hot streak at times, but even then, like as much as his two-way game has improved, you're still seeing some kind of hints of the penalties and whatnot. But I think he's been an overall better player. But even then, Quinn Byfield, I think he's been the best player on the Kings, or at least the best forward on the Kings in the second half of the season.
Funny, Randon, I looked it up because I thought that was interesting because I can't ever remember Byfield really playing with Philippe Deneau this year. And Byfield's played like 100 or 830 some odd minutes, only 24 with Philippe Deneau, the lowest amongst any center on the roster. So it's interesting, I guess.
Very interesting.
Considering he's played 122 with Dubois and 644 with Kopitar, never really saw him with Deneau.
And I think it's just we just totally told ourselves, like you're talking about, oh, you know, McDavid's a horse, this guy's a horse. And then I'm like, well, I just want a guy out there that's not going to just get our team pummeled. You know, like that should be the clue that we're not built for that type of team. And they should be seeing the waves and waves of, you know, full lines going out there. And that's why the Kings were playing their best hockey.
And that's when they were built. They're built on depth. They're built on the center depth. They're built on structure. They're built on two-way defensive zone, offensive zone. So I think doing the 11-7 kind of gets away from who the Kings are.
Could you imagine Kevin Fiala playing with Trevor Lewis and like being like, dude, like, what are we doing here?
Like, he's been on that. I mean,
like cycled that line before.
Yeah, oh, I mean, we've seen Fiala with Lozat and Lewis at times. He's been the guy too, but yeah, I know.
Well, this team is, you know, the playoff race is coming right now as the standings will stand. They're tied with Vegas, but that means we got some unknown tiebreaker. I don't know what it is.
I think it's the win percentage. Because the game, we have a game less. Is that?
No, we're both 592.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I don't know what it is, whether it's wins in regulation. I forget how it goes after that. But which the Kings would win that because they have 32 versus 27. I think it's regulation
wins.
Yeah.
So as of today, the Kings would play Edmonton for the trilogy. And then
I don't hate sequels.
And then you have Stars playing Winnipeg. You would have Vancouver playing Vegas and Nashville playing Colorado. Man. So obviously not obviously a tough draw, and you can't really have a trilogy if you didn't win one of the first rounds to make it there. But it would be Vegas, Edmonton 3. How do you guys view the teams? I mean, it seems like we're the worst team to match up against Edmonton. And And it just, maybe that's just recency bias of the, you know, both playoff losses, not wanting to hear the national broadcast just say McDavid 175 times a night. But it just really seems like that would be a tough draw year one or week or round one for the Kings.
Yeah, but it's funny because as much as we as Kings fans don't want to see Edmonton, I don't think Edmonton wants to see the Kings in the first round either. Because just because there's that familiarity, I mean, it's just hard to beat the same team three times in a row. Not to say that, I mean, the Kings will most definitely be the underdog in almost any playoff matchup they get. So let's just leave it at that. But it's just, yeah, I mean, as much as whoever the Kings play in the first round, I would expect Vegas to end up passing the Kings and take the third spot. So that would leave the Kings, and as well as Nashville's been playing. I mean, Nashville, I think, has got points in their last 13 games. They're on an absolute heater. It seems like they're going to be the first wild card team. So you'd look at the Kings being the second wild card team, and that seems to be either Dallas, Colorado, or Vancouver if they can kind of keep it up. So you never want to wish for matchups, but I think out of all those, I'd probably be the least intimidated by Vancouver.
Did you see that the Women's Hockey League, the number one overall seed, gets to choose their opponent?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Which is kind of weird because I'm sure they'll always just pick the lowest seed. You never want to make too much noise, but it's just an added wrinkle. I think it's kind of fun. Mm-hmm. But yeah. So as far as the Kings, Vegas or Vancouver would probably be, I mean, the second wild card. It just, you see the Kings keep losing, but then you look at the standings and you see, oh, Edmonton could play Vegas in the first round. Okay. I wouldn't mind seeing one of those teams bow out as a Kings fan in the round. One, it'd also be an outstanding playoff series to watch too. So entice me there.
Yeah. I mean, I think of the teams that I think the Kings have a better chance at beating, it would be Vancouver or Winnipeg. I mean, they're not going to see Nashville, and it doesn't look like they're going to see Vegas in the first round. So I'm eliminating those two. And Winnipeg's only 2 points back in the division.
Yeah.
And they got two games in hand on Colorado, three on Dallas. So they're very much there in the hunt for the division. I don't want Edmonton. I don't want Dallas. I don't want Colorado. I don't think the Kings can hang with any of those teams in the slightest. Vegas, again, they won't see them in the first round. Vegas is like an interesting stylistic matchup. They're better, but they don't play a way that like Edmonton does or like Colorado does, that's going to just, or Dallas with pace and that just puck possession and just dominate games. So I think they could knock off of Vegas. To your point, they'd be underdogs, but it shouldn't be lost on people. Edmonton, Colorado, Dallas, teams with incredibly high skill, incredibly high talent, pace, and two of them, well, actually all of them have extremely high end defensemen, that are good at skating, moving pucks. And so it shouldn't be a surprise that those are the three teams that scare me the most.
If it's Edmonton, you picking them to win
against the Kings?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I'll say though, like the one thing with Edmonton, I love Bouchard. And he just destroyed the Kings in the playoffs last year. Love Ekholm. But, man, like, Nurse down, not on the top pair, is better. Not a Cody Ceci guy, though. So their D starts to get a little iffy as you go down in their grouping. So they're not as, like, there's some chinks in the armor in that Edmonton team, particularly on the back end, because I just don't think Cody Ceci is very good, and they play him top 4 minutes and a lot of times with Nurse, and oof, I just think that's kind of a rough pair for your second pair. So I think there's chinks in the armor there, but yes, I would pick Edmonton against LA.
And the thing with Edmonton too, I mean, especially when they face the Kings, what's been the thing that's killed the Kings the most in the last 2 years against Edmonton? The power play. And what's been the best part about the Kings this year? It's the penalty kill. So, I mean, if you do have to face Edmonton, I guess that kind of gives you a little bit more confidence that if they are able to shut down the Oilers' power play, hey, maybe it gives them a chance. Because, I mean, at 5-on-5, I mean, the games that the Kings have played against Edmonton, even this year,
sure,
they've been close. And the Kings won one handsomely, so.
And the Kings, can't the Kings go over the salary cap then too? I mean, because we're talking about how they're strapped and they can only hold so many people.
Yeah, but how are they going to do that?
They can't do that. I mean,
they can't add anybody. Arvidsson,
the only one on LTI, Arvidsson, Copley, Grundstrom. I mean, you can't.
No, but like really in the playoffs. Anybody. In the playoffs, can't you?
You're not going to make a trade or anything. You just add.
No, but yeah, because right now, like you can't have. We're strapped with how many players we can have on the roster once Arvidsson comes back.
Yeah.
No. So, like, you can't have Grundstrom and Arvidsson at the same time with Turcotte and all this kind of thing. But then when the playoff starts, like, you can have a line of Lazat, Grundstrom, Turcotte, or, I mean, they wouldn't take out Lewis, but you could have, you know, PLD, Arvidsson, and, you know, somewhere there and have all your best players play on that.
Well, and I think that's what the Kings are leaning on. I mean, I think that's that. I think somebody, like, it's just, I just love it. Like, he was going to say it anyways, and one of the media members just lobbed Rob Blake a softball. Like, is Kempe, Arvidsson, Mike Anderson like deadline acquisitions? I'm like, Rob Blake was probably like, yes, I didn't have to say it. They asked it to me. So that's obviously what they're gonna play. And I get it, right? It's not to say if they're healthy, these are all top paired defensemen and top six forward. So yeah, I mean those are good players to add back to your lineup. So you're right, Randon. It's just the problem is because they're going to have to find a hard time squeezing these guys in before, and you just wonder who's going to be on the one that ends up. There's going to be a couple of guys that are on the way out because they're not going to have money to keep them. And you figure, despite never playing, it's not going to be Kaliev because he's not waivers exempt. You figure, you know, it could very well be Turcotte, who's not getting big minutes right now, so he may be short end of the stick there when Arvidsson gets back, because I don't think they have the money for him right now.
Well, I think they do, actually. I think they
have, do they?
$4.9 million in cap space right now.
Actually. Oh, okay. For some reason, I thought that they didn't have enough to bring him. Okay.
Cap friendly for me, but
you're right. 4.446. Okay.
So they could activate him right now if they wanted to.
My mistake.
And still have some room. But yeah, it's even then when you get Arvidsson back, yeah, definitely huge impact. They were 3-0 with him in the lineup. They looked really good. Probably had that best stretch with him in the lineup. So that'll be a boost, definitely. But I mean, like you said earlier, Joe, like this team is going as a team without superstars, going up against a Western Conference full of superstars. So any matchup they get, they're going to be the underdogs. But that's kind of like why when we talk about this structure and what the Kings play, that's what they're going to have to lean on because they don't have these superstars. That's what's there. I mean, it sucks to watch in the playoffs, or I mean in the regular season, because you just have to watch it every game where these games are, I guess, a little less meaningful. But you want to see them win. But you just have to watch this 1-3-1 in a game against St. Louis when they're down 3-0, and then it's just in the late and second period. It's just here comes the 1-3-1 neutral zone again. And it's like, okay, how often do we have to see this on a regular season? But then when you get to the playoffs, sometimes it works. And that's kind of be what they're – the only thing that could work for them and help them win, I think, against these good teams.
This is the frustrating part because – I fully acknowledge there's nothing they can do about it right now. They can't change their system.
Yeah, I
get that. But this is the frustrating part, is they have boxed themselves into the system. They have boxed themselves into that because they've acquired players that only fit in the system, you know, specifically on the defense, right? You can't change the system. You can change it. Not every team plays this tight of a structure, even with the, you know, similar defensemen. Like, it can be obviously tweaked a little bit, but you're still going to be limited because in your construction of your roster, you have limited the upside of your players. You know, Gavrikov has done, he's turned his career around basically with the trade to LA, got a big contract for him. Maybe he's going to cash in when he hits UFA after next season. Great. Good for him. You know, seems like a phenomenal guy, but he's limited. He limits the upside of your team. Andreas Englund limits the upside of your team. Mikey Anderson, I'm a fan of. I just don't know that he's, we've talked about this. I don't know if he's a top pair guy. I'd love him more in like that second pair, in the middle pair. So maybe is that inherently kind of limit a little bit of the upside of your team? Although I'm a Mikey fan. Trevor Lewis, there's nothing there. It limits the upside of your team. Like you just, when you do this and you're so focused on defense and structure, yes, that's fine because you have to do that with your personnel, but you didn't have to go actively get that personnel. Like if you inherit that personnel, then you fit it and makes it work. That's what I was wondering where McClellan was going, where the organization was going was, okay, they did this and they fit these, they had to do this system because they were rebuilding and they had to figure out a structure. Okay. When do they take that next step? And we learned last year when their next step was Gavrikov, and then they signed Gavrikov. Like, okay, so they're all in on this prototype of a lefty. And then they signed Englund. And it's like, guys, you're just missing it. You are totally missing. They brought in Lewis. You're totally taking away any potential upside in the depth part of your rosters by boxing guys in that are only good at certain things and they have nothing else to offer. Not their fault. They're really good at what they do, right? Englund's a great fighter. I guess. I don't know. Is he a great fighter? I don't know. He seems to do well. Gavrikov is long, aggressive at the off the defensive blue line, all that stuff. Fine. Lewis is an adequate defensive forward. Cool. Nothing there. That's like, there's nothing that, and again, to your point, it's not like it's the, you blame these three players. I don't blame these three players. I blame the roster construction, the guys that are putting the roster together that put players in boxes, and now there's nowhere for anybody to go. You've limited your flexibility. You've limited your upside. You've limited your offensive potential. And I think that's a huge, huge miss. And that goes back to what we talked about. And yeah, Russ, you're right. Maybe, you know, the 1-3-1 is stingy enough. We'll see who they match up with in the first round. And maybe they have, because they have to play like this. They can't really play another way. But it's not going to be something that goes deep in playoffs because they're going to run into teams that are just so much better talent wise. And because the Kings have chosen not to acquire talent, they've chosen to acquire pieces that fit the mold. And I think that is a huge, huge mistake.
Well, what's so disappointing is with all that you've talked about, it's like we've had this like written in Sharpie on like the whiteboards in our brains with the, when we write our lineups, that the Kings just for some reason never wanted to give a chance for Jordan Spence or Brent Clark playing the left side and maybe open up a little bit more offensive opportunity, add a little bit more dynamic playmaking ability. And not to say that you can do that now, because I don't want to see that happen now. It's like, okay, you get to the point where you're getting to, like you said, Joe, they're gonna have to win or die on the 1-3-1 structure. That's just what it is at this point. But when you're going through those stretch in January where you're just losing game after game after game, and you had Brent Clark on the roster with that long road trip, you just never really gave your chance the opportunity to even see it once, really. And that's what's so frustrating. Like, hey, who knows? Maybe you one of those overtime losses turns into an overtime win because you have that skill-making capability on the back end, but they just never showed us the reason for want to do that. So now we just kind of assume that that'll never happen. So like, it's just kind of frustrating because you talk about how there's really no skill on the back end, but there is skill. There's plenty of skill on the back end. They just don't know how to use it. And unfortunately they have to rely on that system now to win them games. And I'm not going to sit here and say that it's not going to work. Because it might, who knows? It could work. I mean, they took Edmonton to 7 games 2 years ago. They took them to 6 games last year. And that was with some players injured.
So it worked for the first 2 months.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, and exactly. It worked for the first 2 months. So we'll see what happens in the playoffs. I don't give them a lot of – they don't give me a lot of confidence that they're going to be successful. But I would love to see them turn it around and figure it out. I think that'd be spectacular.
We're going to be underdogs, and the number one underdog for our team is Trevor Moore. And in response to his 25th goal – Hockey Royalty is now selling his shirt for $25. So go and contact at hockeyroyalty.com. We accept Venmo. If you guys can't do Venmo, then Russ will get with you on how we can make it work. Still got sizes in all small through XL. We're still working on future
support, everybody.
T-shirt ideas. Yes, appreciate the support. So that way you guys have more options. Yes, we heard you on the double XL and maybe the triple XL. future t-shirts will have those sizes for you. We're definitely trying to get a nice little design together for the future, and hope you guys stay with us there. But we still got plenty of Trevor Moore shirts available for now, $25 because of his record setting or career setting 25th goal. Hey, your 30 is looking a little tight there, but still possible there, Joe. Still
it's on pace for 31, but it's getting tight. So Chicago's a great time for a hat trick. How about
there? There we go. Well, appreciate you guys coming in. Please hit that like button on the way out. As always, find our articles at hockeyroyalty.com, Twitter, hockey_royalty, at RandoCommando24, NHL Russell, JW Paterino, and Kopitar4HOF for all your prospect and rain news. Hey, we have a first-round pick this year, so we're going to be diving into some prospects at the end of the season, but we got some business to handle for your LA Kings. So thank you guys for coming in. Again, please hit that like button on the way out. Subscribe. We're only 3 scribers away to getting our goal for the season of 1,000. So just hijack your coworker's phone and press the subscribe button. But appreciate you guys. And as always on this podcast, go Kings go.